So first what we did was that we kind of looked toward the means that we're developing within DS-106. So first we identified the infamous Bagman, who has been a key character throughout DS-106 since the beginning. And we thought it'd be even more hilarious with combining it from those design assignments where we were creating political ads if we did a political debate. Now, we already know that Bagman is going to be president of the United States, hands down. So the question became, who's going to be his number two? And that's when Annie and I had remembered she had done her funny alligator, and then Angela had responded. So we're like, those kids are wanting to fight it out. So we let them fight it out of becoming the VP. So we, as the host for AMCX, decided to go to the political debate between Angela and Alligator, where Bagman was answering the question, similar to what we're seeing with the same puppet show with the Republican candidate debates.
Better.
But better. And second, we were also working with Linda. Linda, as we all know, is one of the more famous online students. We were really excited to be working with her, and we wanted to also incorporate other key members of the online community, including Norm. So again, our main focus of the project was to incorporate the means and the people who were within DS-106, including Norm and Linda, and this guy named Kim Droom. He kind of went on these long tangents and talked a lot about himself, and his ego was out of control. So unfortunately, we did decide to include him. But
he's good looking.
But maybe after some more things.
Keep talking.
So this was the theory behind the AMCX radio show. Annie, did you want to go over some of the Pacific editing's behind it?
I used GarageBand. I didn't download Audacity until the very end of the project because I needed to normalize it. And I thought that GarageBand didn't have a normalizing feature. I couldn't figure it out, but then I realized as it was saving my GarageBand files, it does this thing where it's like normalizing and it takes, I don't know, 10 seconds or something. So we all familiarized ourselves with GarageBand as well as Audacity, and we used a number of sounds from freesound.org. I don't have much to say about it other than that.
I think one of the key aspects of editing that I'm sure all of you guys also experienced was how incredibly tedious it can be of just like selecting the files, saving it, and then also creating those transitions so it's not quite so choppy, which I think was our biggest struggle, especially with the investigative report with Kim Droom and Linda, was because there were so many different layers of sounds and how to make them not competing, how to make them seem like this broad general story. It made me appreciate NPR a lot more, and actually I listened to it a lot while I was doing a lot of the editing to see what they were doing to make it seem so cohesive. And I tried to also reflect a radio voice similar to Jack because he was au naturel, and he set that bar, and we tried to compete with that bar. Let's see, what else can we say about the AMCX radio show? Several of our meetings actually just took place at DuPont, where we just sort of ping-ponged ideas back and forth, and where we did a lot of the writing was, we did a lot of the script. We didn't do too much impromptu speaking, because I don't think that that ever does a really cohesive speech. It's so organized. Like what I'm doing right now. This is impromptu. We're doing it live. Hey, radio. Hello. So we actually worked out the script together. And actually what was really interesting that Annie actually pointed out to me was that when you're creating the script, you actually have to like keep in mind this same perspective. Like I kept confusing what time of day it was. So within my script itself, I would say like today and then tonight and then later. But it like the time sequence wasn't making sense. And although since I was the one writing it, I wasn't seeing it. Annie was just like, wait, what day is this? When is any of this happening? So I think designing this radio show and editing it really makes you focus on like those types of very small details, and this is just incredibly detailed oriented, and thank God I'm anal retentive because I was able to do it. So in short, that's sort of the making behind, the theory behind it as well, and some of the editing problems that we have. Were you able to see our little poster?
I'm just going to pull it back up while it's playing. That's cool.
Okay.
Perfect.
So we're going to play the introduction for you, and then I guess we'll be hearing the political debate since you already heard some of the investigative report.
Right.
Is the sound going to be okay?
Should be.
Okay.
If not, I'm going to grab my coffee.
offices of the DS-106 lab just outside Jim Gurns' natural habitat. This is the AMCX radio show. Tonight, we'll bring you some highlights from Batman's search for a VP in an exclusive interview with the infamous Dr. Kim Drew. Welcome, I'm MC.
And I'm Annie. Linda will be joining us later in the show. We've been following presidential candidate Batman during his search for a VP. Here are the highlights from tonight's debate between vice presidential candidates Alligator and Angela.
I'm here in Bagtown, Maryland, where Alligator and Angela are minutes away from the critical debate that will decide who will run as Batman's VP. Last time we were here, Alligator threw down the gauntlet, officially putting her name in the race, something that Angela was not prepared for. Now let's turn to Batman as he approaches the stage.
Welcome to the first, and you know, I'm pretty sure the only pre-vice presidential type debate thingamajig. I'm your host, the future president of the United States, Adam Backman.
Thank you. It's a pleasure for me, Angela, to be at this debate for VP, vice president.
Hello, Batman. And my opponent, Angela. It is very nice to see you here again, and to you the same, Batman. I am your future VP.
Let's get started with our first question. Pause for applause. Candidates, in your opinion, is 8-time Grammy winner Adele stockpiling nuclear weapons? And
yes.
If so, should we invade?
Do I think Adele is stockpiling nuclear weapons? No, I do not think that the 8-time Grammy winner Adele is stockpiling nuclear weapons. I am more concerned about biological weapons. For example, she says that she set fire to the rain and watched it burn. Watched it burn! Who knows where she'll go next? Clearly, she was rolling in the dirt and almost had it all. We should definitely invade Adele. Absolutely. I mean, I hate to show up out of the blue uninvited, but we must keep freedom safe. Plus, we must feed the industrial military complex without our money.
Very good, Angela, but I tend to disagree. Before we ask, is an 8-time Grammy Award winner Adele stockpiling nuclear weapons? We should ask first, what is the meaning of Adele? According to meaningofname.com, Adele means noble and kind. And according to biography.com, Adele Laurie Blue Atkins grew up listening to Bob Marley, and she went to the same school of the performing arts as Amy Winehouse, and she got famous after someone heard her music on MySpace. And one of the records that made her famous is called Chasing Pavement. Should I give up, or should I just keep chasing pavement? It goes like that. Also, she channeled the energy from her heartbreak into one explosive record called 21. And now she is making millions and millions of Grammy Awards and monies off of the back of a breakup. Given that she has two middle names, one of which is Blue, and that she loves Bob Marley, and that she went to the same place as Amy Winehouse, and that she got famous from MySpace, and that she just keeps chasing pavement, and that she sings songs about her broken heart, I do not think that 8-time Grammy Award winner Adele is stockpiling nuclear weapons. But yes, we should intervene before she dies of a broken heart.
Question two. Describe Jim Groom in one hashtag.
Hashtag for Jim Groom? Definitely #nobody. Not that Jim Groom is nobody, because Jim Groom is somebody, but nobody is like Jim Groom, of course.
#nobody. Angela, you're funny. Oh my goodness, okay. Describe Jim Groom in one hashtag. I would have to say #mrafe. 5807. Because I firmly maintain to this day that Jim Groom and his alter ego, Kim Droom, have something to do with the existence of Embry. But don't tell Jimmy.
If you were a cog dog, what type of cog dog would you be? A St. Bernard, a cog Great Dane, or maybe a cog of Weimaraner?
What kind of cog dog am I? I would be a cross between a cog Doberman and a cog poodle, which would make me a cog doodle. As if I'm a cog doodle. You might be able to put lipstick on a cog doodle, but it is still at the end of the day just a cog doodle.
A cog doodle. Angela, stop it, please. If I were a cog dog, what kind of cog dog would I be? Well, let's see here. I would be a cross between a cog terrier and a cog beagle. And that would make me, I suppose, under Angela's philosophy, a cog terrier beagle. And my bark would sound like this. You'll get
so brave.
Which do you prefer, Argyle or Cotton Twill?
Cotton Twill? Well, 9 out of 10 pirates choose Argyle. Yes, I choose Argyle too.
Angela, I'm not a funny one, but really though, I may as well not answer, but I suppose I have to. Let me consult my campaign manager. Hey Jim, do you think Cotton would like the new Argyle sweater I got for him? Yes.
What makes you qualified to be my VP, which is the super secret industry term for vice president? It's not a big deal, I was the Westerly.
Countrymen, lend me your beers. I am uniquely qualified to be the vice president because I have many vices. And why not be vice president as well?
Well, future POTUS. I watch the West Wing too, and that means I know everything there is to know. Most importantly, Candidate Alligator runs on a platform of tolerance. Whether you are a cockadoodle or a cockatiel beagle, whether you have scaly green skin or a wardrobe like Rick Santorum, Vice President Alligator believes in tolerance and acceptance. Unless, of course, you are Rick Santorum. In which case, I've suddenly and mysteriously run out of tolerance and acceptance. But that's probably for the better.
When we make it to the White House, how will you bring your lunch to work?
Make no mistake, 1,000 points of life cannot be wrong. Read my lips, Bagman for President, Angela for Vice President, and therefore I will bring my lunch to the White House in a paper bag. Viva la paper bag revolutione.
Viva la paper bag revolutione. Angela, Angela, I have to hand it to you. You're a very funny lady. What she said.
There you have it. Thank you for joining us, DS106 radio listeners. And remember, vote early, vote often.
All right. where corn subsidies, the U.S. government, and cheddar cheese collide. Only one name, one taste, one shade of deliciously cheesy neon orange powder can thwart your instinct for hours of craving fulfillment. This summer, follow one woman's journey into a shiny red bag, where truth will rise from darkness, perfection will be taste tested, and quality will not be assumed. This summer, Frito-Lay brings you Doritos, a story of crispy goodness.
Okay, we're going to play one more bumper for you.
Good evening, Fredericksburg. Annie here with an updated weather report for tomorrow. Looks like we can expect a high of 65, the low around 32. There will be some foggy conditions forming as the evening cools, but no other forms of precipitation expected for tomorrow going into tomorrow evening. Partly cloudy conditions around mid-afternoon, but for the most part, tomorrow looks to be a nice spring day with unusually high temperatures. Stay tuned for weather updates brought to you by AMCX Radio.
On with the show.
And now we'll hear from Linda in the field.
Alright, so that's the first half of our radio show. Do you have any questions? What cog dog would you be?
All dogs are good.
All dog good.
It's true.
It did take me a while to figure out she's a cog doodle and she draws. I will admit it took me a little while to get that. So
I definitely encourage you to listen to the latter half because that's the part that Linda did a majority of the work for, and it's really, really incredible. Rachel and I were listening to her first version of her interview with Kim Droom and the segment that she has for about, I don't know, maybe 6 minutes or so where she's interacting with Norm.
We have enough time to listen to 5 minutes of it.
Okay,
yeah.
It's really good.
And then we'll set up a time where we do the whole thing live.
Okay.
Are we live now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, but the entire show again.
Okay. For the most part, tomorrow looks to be a nice spring day with unusually high by AMCX Radio.
On with the show.
And now we'll hear from Linda in the field.
This is Linda on location at an old rundown gas station somewhere in the Catskills. I was told to come here to meet a man known as the Gatekeeper, who will escort me to the secret location of Kim Droom. Let's go inside. Hello? Hi. I'm looking for a man known as the Gatekeeper.
Oh, I wasn't expecting to see you. You're that lady, aren't you? You looking for Kim D?
Norm? Is that you? Norm from DS106 Online?
Yeah, it's me. Nice to meet you. So what's your business with Dr. Doom?
I'm here to interview Detective Droom. He's expecting me. Are you the escort?
Interview, huh? Whatever. It's none of my business. I just gotta get you there. Here, put this on first to make sure you can't see anything. Got it?
A blindfold? Is all this necessary?
You wanna get to him? I just can't let you see the way in.
All right, as you wish. Here we go.
Well, he's pretty uptight these days. Sorry. So how many fingers am I showing?
I don't know. You blindfolded me, remember?
Okay, good enough. Come this way.
Okay, but I'm gonna grab your sleeve since I can't see anything. This is crazy.
All right, we're gonna get out in a minute. It's kind of wet and cold down there. You like snakes?
What? Snakes?
This kind of worry. I'll toss them some yams. They won't bother us. Okay, here we go. Grab my arm. No, my arm. That's more like it. All right, just a few steps down this hall. I gotta open the vault now. Just a sec.
What was that?
That's like a safe. Kim can't be too careful these days. Now we knock. For life. Yeah, you better answer too, just so he knows it's you.
Oh, me too? Okay. For life.
All right then, go in three steps and then take that blindfold off. I'll wait out here until you're done.
Good afternoon, Detective. So this is where you've been hiding. Can you tell me why all this secrecy about your location?
Well, you can never be too safe. The times we're living in, when anyone can be hacked at any point, the things I've learned about MRA-5807, and just the basic moment in which I find myself in. Let me tell you, Linda, I've seen some terrible things. I worked on the Jersey City Police Department as a detective for over 20 years. The things I can tell you, the stories I can tell you.
You can share those with us when we have a little more time.
Maybe.
Another day.
Another day.
Okay.
You don't want to hear one of them.
Okay, tell us one, please.
Well, back in 1985, I've been on the force maybe 2 years at that point, maybe three. Not a very long time. If I did my math, I came on in 82, it's 2012. That would be 22 years, 32 years. I really don't know what year it was. I was taking a lot of drugs. It's worth thinking about being on the Jersey City Police Department.
So don't need to laugh at you.
That's all right, I understand. You're nervous, right?
Yes.
I'd be nervous too if I was in a dark, snake-filled pit halfway beneath the center of the earth with a weird looking detective. Long hair, sunglasses, even though it's pitch black.
It's quite an experience.
It is. You seem to be shaking. You're all right.
Okay.
You want me to bring Norm in the room?
No, that's fine.
He's his own beast to deal with. So what were we talking about?
Awesome. I mean, I really had a couple of quick notes about what you've done. The transitions early on when you did the Bagman stuff and the way in which Rachel, you're introducing, and then Andy, you come in. I mean, those effects sound so beautiful. And the way in which your bumpers, I mean, it sounds professional. Right? And the Bagman debate was brilliant. I don't know how anyone else felt. I felt maybe it could have been tightened up a little bit, but it was a brilliant kind of back and forth, and the acting was a lot of fun. So, I mean, if this is an indicator of what the other half is, I can't wait to listen to the rest of it. Anyone else with comments? Things
really
they like?
The weather.
It's actually
it's
right on
here, Sean.
I recorded it like last Tuesday, so it was prophetic.
It was.
But the way in which it seemed like the public radio had seeped into your presentation of this and the way in which you paced it and did it was really impressive how much you guys kind of figured out and not copy, but like worked into your own rhythm. So that seemed like a professional radio show.
Thanks.
Really, really good.
And also commendable that you worked in so many people in DS-106, like Norm, who Linda didn't even, she did all remotely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that probably more than anything speaks to just the philosophy of the class in general, and that we don't have to let geographic barriers limit our interaction in terms of coming together to work collaboratively.
And the fact that Linda and Norm, she had him record those and then do them, and then she worked on top of his recordings was brilliant because it sounds like they're working together. And the way she used those sound effects to really pull the palette together was absolutely brilliant. I mean, it does make everything, wherever you... You know, if you're listening close enough, you might be able to see the difference, but those sound effects smooth everything out.
Those are real subtle things, the doors closing, the clicks and all.
Linda is brilliant. Yeah. She's so silly because she said she thought this show would
prove that
she's an imposter or something. And I was like, Linda, if anything, I don't know.
Waiting for that to happen.
Right? Yeah, I know.
Awesome. Well, great job.
Thank you.
Jack, Chris, you guys up? All right. So bring up your audio, introduce your work, do a brief introduction, and then we're going.
Can order this. We'll part to you. Jack, this is Brian. We did JBC Mystery Radio with Chelsea, who's an online student. And for this, it was a lot of fun to do, and we got sort of rolling in one night and got all of our recording done. But what we did was, Brian had like a very basic idea for the direction we wanted to go. Then we all met in the studio upstairs in this building. And we just sort of worked on a Google Doc together, writing the script at the same time, and sort of rolling with each other and off what other people were writing. And it sort of built off of there and evolved. And you know, changing things as we went, obviously, depending on which directions the show went in. But that's pretty much how the script came to be. Then we did all of our recording that night, all the voice recordings anyway. And we tried to do them, like if there were two people talking, we have some interviews. We tried to do them at the same time instead of multiple takes to sound more natural and stuff like that. But yeah, and then, I don't know if you're just gonna add to that, Brian.
I mean, yeah, we did, like we based it off This American Life. We might have kind of over-dramatized it a bit, but I think it was fair. And I mean, yeah, the kind of hard thing was to have a script and then have that be acted out and make it sound natural. And I mean, I think it was good that we all participated in it and spoke and like tried to be on radio rather than have like Jack dominate discussion, because Jack just has a natural voice. But I mean, I think me and Chelsea struggled some. She went fast. I kind of can't say my R's and L's that well sometimes. So
I think reading this, we read the parts that we wrote for the most part, which I think helped a little bit with that.
Yeah.
More comfortable saying it.
How was that? It seemed like AMCX worked together quite well, even though they had an online student. You too. It was two
yeah.
in the face to face online. How was it working with the online student and working together basically?
I mean, she was very like enthusiastic, and like even though she went to Florida, she was like, "What do I need to do to get this done?" And like, was very helpful in trying to be active and do her share. And even though she's not like here physically,
yeah.
So it wasn't really a barrier, just like with Linda.
Yeah.
Excellent. And yeah, I guess we'll. I guess editing wise, I mean, we tried to throw in a bunch of stuff, and it is hard to like get the music to all match up and everything, but I think we worked hard to get it as best it could be, and I mean, noise Audacity works really well because you can just like select a little part that's like white noise and then remove it real easily. So that was very helpful.
The hardest part I found with adding music was like you get something in your head of what you want it to be in the background, then you have to try and find that sound, and it's like impossible to do. So you have to settle for something that's not that. But I think it worked out.
I think the next day is when it's like, well, how to become a musician. I've never heard of your show before. It's awesome. All right.
Yeah, well, start
it off. I have a feeling you're going to enjoy this quite a lot.
I'll bring up that picture. Sorry.
It's JBC Mystery Radio.
From JBC Mystery, distributed by DS106 Radio International, this is Mac Jewelry. Today we are going to bring to you a different kind of story. We travel to a place most listeners haven't even heard about, Fredericksburg, Virginia. This story takes us 30 years back to 1982 in a quaint little campus of about 3,000 students at Mary Washington College. It was a simpler time. No internet, no cell phones, just Michael Jackson dominating the airwaves. One would argue it was a better time. It was under these circumstances that the events of this story transpired. This is an important distinction to make, as the actions of students and faculty do not reflect the actions one might expect to see were the same events to occur today. As such, this story is not just a tale of mystery, but a rare look into the changing nature of how humans view their environment. Something mysterious appears on campus. There's wonder, there's confusion, there's speculation, and then nothing happens for a long time. A very long time. Students and faculty carry on with their lives as if nothing had ever happened. Until one day, months later, something does happen. In Act 1, we have a story brought to you by Trevor Langston, a junior at the college in 1982. In Act 2, we have an interview by JBC Mystery Radio with an expert in the field looking at Trevor's story, what happened back in 1982, and what this all means. This is JBC Mystery Radio. Enjoy.
So, what do you remember?
What do I remember?
This is my old roommate, James.
Well, Sarah had just broken up with me. I was on my way to Virginia on the other side of campus from Jefferson to try and, you know, work things out. I didn't want to give up. I loved her. She was the light of my life. Still is. Anyways, so I was going down campus walk. People were walking everywhere. I was in a hurry. I couldn't get Sarah off my mind. I wasn't really looking too carefully at the stuff I see every day, you know? If I hadn't dropped my wallet on the sidewalk, I might not even have noticed it.
Noticed what?
Well, I saw the shadows first. They appeared all of a sudden, like, kind of looming. I looked up slowly and saw that nobody around me even noticed yet. I figured it was for some club or something, so I just wrote it off and kept walking. I still struggle to understand what happened back then. What was on Ball Circle? What did I feel? What did I see? Who was out there? And does any of this even matter? And the more and more I prod, the less and less it all makes sense. Students say one thing, others say another. And as time passes, people seem to have just forgotten. There wasn't any sort of news coverage, nationally or even local. The only written record that remains is from a bold article titled, "The Mystery on Ball." No one remembers, not administration, not faculty, not even most of the students who were out there. And for the ones that do, the story just keeps changing. I feel crazy, like I've lost my mind, but I know I haven't. What I saw and what I remember is real, yet I feel like I'm the only one who really knows, who really remembers if they're in what. Well, what was your first impression?
I remember being scared by all the confusion.
This is my other friend, Jessie. She was a freshman then.
I was in my dorm just a little ways away from Ball Circle, so I could hear the commotion from my room. The first thing I did was peer out my window to see if I could make sense of it. But the crowd of people gathered around it were blocking my view.
Can you describe in some detail about what you saw out there?
Well, I couldn't get a good look, just a glance. So I grabbed my roommate and we ran outside to get a better look. By the time we got there, campus police were already making a perimeter and urging students to disperse. That being one to question authority, I went to the base of Seco, where I heard there were some students with more details. That was a rumor, of course, but the rumors were flying around for days, even weeks after it appeared. No one seemed to know who was behind it, and as we were trying to get to the bottom of it, it just sat there.
Well, didn't you get a better look once the perimeter came down a few days later? It's my understanding that it sat there for a few months after the fact.
I mean, yeah, it was pretty awesome. I still remember the weird smell. To this day, I haven't smelled anything like it. Eventually, though, it stopped dominating discussion. Sure, it was cool, but we had exams to worry about, and it just didn't seem that important.
Jessie is still a good friend of mine. We met in the history class and have been friends ever since. Yet what she was saying to me doesn't match up with what I remember. She won't give me the details I want, as if there's some void in her memory, as if the story she is telling makes sense to her but no one else. She can't see what's staring her in the face. And this amazes me, because back then, nothing ever happened at the college. I mean nothing. The place was still very conservative. Only after World War II did the college even break away from its all-female regulations. Even then, boys were still only allowed to attend classes, and now several loudspeakers when entering dormitories. So why can't anyone remember when something actually did happen?
That's pretty much how it went. A few days later, people were still talking about it, but I just thought it was an elaborate prank. I mean, you don't really expect this kind of stuff, so of course I was going to try to find some kind of excuse for it. How many times have you walked by something and taken it for granted? What if everyone's doing the same thing and it's not supposed to be there? Then you got trouble.
I see your point, but from what I've heard, this was something extraordinary. How can an entire campus of faculty and students simply overlook it? Surely someone questioned it.
If you try. There was even a special interest column in the school paper trying to raise awareness. The administration had nothing to do with it, though, and eventually got caught in the bolt. They said it would only serve to encourage the prankster, if I recall correctly.
So eventually people just ignored it.
Well.
Yeah, everyone just seemed to forget about it and move on. After a while, it was gone just as quickly as it had come, and we went on with our lives.
I do remember something else that happened. It was summer after my freshman year. I'd lived in Fredericksburg my whole life. One evening, as I was walking through campus, I started to notice white handprints all in the buildings. They would stop and continue as if marked in some crazy primal ritual. I remember seeing them on my road, Trinkle, Virginia. I learned later from my parents that one of the student painters took a gallon of eggshell white from work
and locked their hands on the buildings in some sort of bizarre prank, which must have taken an unbearable amount of effort to clean the paint off the brick. But that was the worst. Nothing ever came close to this until my junior year. This should have been all over the media. How did it knock it out?
There isn't really a simple answer for that. This wouldn't want bad press, so you can bet the administration wasn't going out of its way to bring reporters. Looking back, it would have been a great opportunity to put us on the map, but that's all in the past. At the same time, the Falklands War was just starting and the April blizzard of 82 hit. The big news stations had more on their place than they could handle. I think a combination of all these things kept the story from blowing up.
I think if we'd known more about it at the time, things would have been different.
Different how?
It's not the kind of stuff people let slip on the radar. If research on it started back then, I can only imagine how much further along we'd be. As far as I can see it, scientists are still drilling, including how long the process will take.
Still drilling? For what? Where?
I did a double take when I saw the pictures on the news. I had put it out of my mind completely, but those images just brought back all the memories.
I had a call in the middle of the night. James told me. I didn't believe it at first. I thought it was a dream. I went back and checked for myself, and sure enough, there it was. Just where I'd seen it 3 years ago.
Wait, what was there? What pictures on the news?
You didn't see? It was all over my web.
Yeah, how'd you miss it? This is your story, isn't it? You were there. You remember it. How could you forget?
I feel lost, confused. How could I not remember? It's as if every time I remember something, something else is also being forgotten. What am I missing? Why doesn't this make sense to anyone else? To Jesse and to James, the story seems finished, complete. But to me, it will never be done. I remember what I saw that day, and I don't care if anyone else believes it. There was something out there, real and vivid, and it wasn't of this time. People should have cared. Should have done something about it. But no one did. And then it just went away.
Are you unaware of what is going on around you? Do you enjoy poverty? Does your future involve you being a destitute brigand marauding playgrounds for kids' lunch money so you can find the means necessary to get your apology scheme up and running? No. No, you don't. In this world of failing markets, of corrupt politicians, and of an unreliable future, now is the time to wake up and take action for your own comfort and security. The era of the dollar is over. In 5 years, the dollar will be worth only 80% of what it is today. In 10 years, it will be worth 20. Printing more money is taxation without representation, and it happens every day. Buy gold. Gold will always be gold. It can't lose value. Value is in its chemistry. Simple science. Gold. Call 1-800-370-7596. That's 1-800-370-7596. And start buying gold today.
To Big Box Cars this Saturday for the best deal on used cars in the county for our annual spring cleaning sale. We will be serving fresh breakfast until noon, so get here before it's gone. We've got a wide selection, and we are sure that you will find what you're looking for, from Fords to Cadillacs to Saturns and Priuses too. Starting at just $1.99 a month. So come on out and join us for breakfast this Saturday at Big Box Cars, located on I-95 exit 120 in Caroline County. For more information, call us at 540-272-9999. That's 540-272-9999. Offer expires April 2012. Sales do not include taxes. Offer excludes customers who do not send a mail before February 2019. No taxes. Cash, card, or money order only. Nothing can be available to those who qualify for early. See you in
Welcome back to JBC Mystery Radio. We'll resume with Act 2 in today's broadcast. The highly renowned Dr. Susan Souza is here with us tonight. She is the author of How to Train Your Teenager, What to Do Next, and the co-author of the widely used volume of textbooks, Suffering from Brutal Traumas, What to Expect. After completing her undergraduate education at the University of Rhode Island with a BS in psychology, she continued on to the Chicago University of Psychology, where she received her PhD in experimental psychology with a concentration in trauma treatment. She spent the last 20 years researching and investigating how human behavior is influenced by traumatizations, as well as teaching yoga classes on Tuesday nights at the Long Island YMCA. Welcome, Susan.
Thanks, Matt, and good evening, listeners. This story is one that is very fascinating. When I look at it, I notice there's a lot going on. I'd really like to focus on the students' reactions. Based on the reports and coverage of the events taking place that day, students were described as reacting in a chaotic frenzy. We came across a report by Smith from 2003 in which he described students as, quote, a gigantic school of hungry fish going for food just dropped into a recently cleaned fish tank. Also, I found something by Reynolds in a paper from 1999 stating, quote, some of the students engaged in behaviors that only a person experiencing mass hysteria would engage in. Also, a reporter from the Freelance Star claimed that he saw students running for shelter and others pulling out their cameras to photograph it. However, very little footage has ever been released. I think we can all agree that the reactions of the students were quite wild and this got a lot of attention from the entire science community. So I realized that researchers from across the board have proposed a number of theories as to what happened that day. Some thought that seeing it, if it even exists, and I'll get to that later, may have been so traumatizing that students went to shock and began to panic. This panic may have possibly been induced by paralysis and higher processing in regions of the brain from the shock of seeing it, or possibly from substance abuse problems. Another theory is that there was an underlying affair at the university that may have contributed to a state of psychosis in the students, but we don't really know.
So what is your take on the various descriptions of it? And how does this contribute to the confusion and mystery that still exists today? What's your theory?
The variety in the accounts of the event even suggests that this could have been a prank pulled by a group of students with an externalizing behavior disorder and a solidified plan. There's a lot of speculation as to whether anything actually happened that day. I would say that because there's no uniform report between the witnesses, there's a chance that the entire thing could be a hoax or enormous and terrible misunderstanding.
Whoa, now I'm interested. I want to see where you're going with this. So you were saying that you think the student body may have schemed an elaborate plan to trick everyone?
Well, that's not entirely what I'm trying to suggest. Rather, for any listeners who read Suffering from Real Traumas, you may be familiar with mass hysteria. It's similar to mass hysteria, and that involves multiple individuals acting out in very abnormal ways with no physiological explanation. People infected with this temporary mental illness experience strange and spontaneous feelings of fear. Only a few cases have ever been reported, and specialists in this field have found that there is a strong correlation between stress and assault behavior. Specifically, we're talking about an interaction between stress and nitrogen compound ingestion. This has also been found to exist, and it's actually really fascinating.
So what does this mean?
This essentially means that people who experience stress, and we're talking about a population of individuals far, far above a healthy level of stress, these people will probably not exhibit this hysteric behavior. People who consume large amounts of nitrogen compounds are probably not going to exhibit mass hysmonophobia symptoms either.
What do you mean by nitrogen compounds?
I was actually about to get to that. But nitrogen compounds are found in things like fertilizers, fireworks, and hot dogs, surprisingly. What I was saying earlier is that people who are at this maximum level of stress and have ingested or taken in somehow large amounts of nitrogen compounds, they seem to exhibit the abnormal behavior that we've described from this event.
That's crazy.
I know. It gets better. I stumbled upon a couple of old schedules from the Office of Student Activities Archives and found that there have been a number of cookouts in Ball Circle the weeks leading up to this day. Also, there had been a fireworks show 3 days before the incident. And even more interesting, I investigated archives from scheduled maintenance reports from the university's groundkeepers. They only go back to 1995, but every spring, fertilizer has been dispersed on all the grass areas on campus, most heavily in early April. If this is indeed the case for 1982, there may be a stronger argument that the students from the mild state of psychosis causing them to engage in this very impulsive and wild behavior.
Susie, we're just about out of time, but I wanted to thank you for coming out here and sharing your expertise with us.
No problem. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
At JBC Mystery Radio, there's often an ending. The murder is solved, the criminal is caught. There's little else to say. This wasn't the case in today's story. Some mysteries are never solved. Trevor Langston will never understand what happened on Ball Circle in 1982. The only answer is to put the story to rest, to drop it, to move on. And that's our broadcast. Thanks for tuning in to JBC Mystery Radio. Tune in to next week's broadcast on DS-105, The Untold Story. I'm Mac Jewelry, signing out.
Well, we want to move smoothly to the next one, but I do have a question. Am I alone? Does anyone here know what actually happened to Paul Sarkle?
I don't.
Was that the intention?
Well done.
You pulled that out.
I was wondering if you were doing that, because you had all the talking around the actual event, and then we see the handprints. I'm looking for something to go with the visual. But there was never really a description of what happened.
That's a mystery.
That's awesome. That's like Faulkner. Like, that's like deep psychological radio right there. Like, that's like literature radio. Well done.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Great.
You guys
okay.
Nailed this time.
And now for the comic relief.
A more serious.
Keep it clean.
Should
have
said that.
Introduce yourself, your show, and let's see your
doctor.
I saw the
doctor's
poster.
Yeah, sure. I'm Thomas Ella, and
Nick Antonini,
Darwin Love,
and now you introduce me.
Oh, Michael Walter.
Thank you.
And I worked with Paul Tunick, online student.
Woo. There was no boundary,
and we decided we wanted to make a relationship hotline. Trapped in the closet with Dr. Love. So,
uh-oh.
Who is
it? I searched sexy male doctor on Google.
I thought you searched Jim Groom.
Yeah.
Lots of Photoshop.
Yeah.
Screw you.
And we mostly just used GarageBand. We just wrote out stuff and then edited it to be a little more appropriate.
Why don't we let them hear
it?
We have time.
We'll answer questions.
They went for witty and funny. We went for cheap and easy humor.
Anything you want to say before you introduce it?
It's expect the worst.
Expect the worst.
Prepare for the best.
Prepare for the end.
Make sure that level's
good. Everyone, you know what time it is. It is 10 p.m. on Thursday, and you're with the Big Gatsby to your favorite show, Trapped in the Closet with Dr. Love. I'm going to start this show off like I do every show, introducing my three guests. We have Dr. Love,
hello.
P. Tuna,
ew.
And the Darwin of Love. Let's give an introduction and let Dr. Love speak.
Well, I'd just like to tell all you mean listeners out there a little bit about myself. I'm Dr. Love. I got my PhD in Loveology in 1978, and I graduated with Love Honor from Love University. Now, none of you can tell out there, because this is the radio, but I'm naked right now.
Thank you, Dr. Love. You are naked, and it is wonderful. Yes. Now, let's give it up for P. Tuna.
P. Tuna, I wish you would have spat sooner here. I'm glad to be here tonight. I want to thank the Big Gatsby for having me here. Happy to be in the presence of the great Dr. Love, and I hope I can learn a little sum-sum from you. Maybe a big sum-sum, if you know what I'm saying. I'm excited to talk to you all about love and sex tonight.
Thank you, P. Tuna. We're glad to have you here. And for the man who thought of the theory of love, Darwin of Love
here, long time listener, Big Gatsby. Thanks for having me. I had some Dion tickets tonight for me and my lady friend, but couldn't pass up this opportunity to be in the presence of greatness.
Now, thank you. We're glad to have you here also. We have a special show tonight where we're going to get some ladies, some gentlemen to call in, and we're going to see what's going to happen. You three are the experts on love, let's see what we have. Now for our first caller, Mandy, how are you tonight?
Oh my god, Big Gatsby? Oh my god, Dr. Love? Hello? Are you guys there?
We're here, Mandy.
I've never actually got my phone call answered. Oh my god, I don't even know what to say. I've thought about this for so long. Can I ask you guys a question?
That's what we're here for, Mandy.
Dr. Love, can you describe to me your perfect first day?
Thank you, Mandy. Good question. We've all been there. Good, bad, all. TK, do you not? I'm sure you've all had some strange stories. Let's start it off with Dr. Love. Give me some love.
Well, when Dr. Love usually plays things, we end up skipping over the first date entirely and go straight to the third date. You know what Dr. Love is saying.
I think we all know what
Well, what Dr. Love is saying is that if the first date doesn't end with breakfast and giving her a fake phone number, Dr. Love done something wrong, if you know what Dr. Love is saying.
I think we all know
what Dr. Love is saying there is that all my first dates end in sexual relations.
Dr. Love. Lovely as always. See, Tina, give us some insight.
Perfect first date, huh? That sounds like an oxymoron. You know, it's tough to get things perfect on the first try. But if I had to answer the question, you know, I'd say it'd start with a pretty girl. You know, Dr. Love knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
I would then bring her to a movie to see if she passes the test. What's the test, you ask?
What is the test?
It's a make or break thing for me. The test is that I maneuver myself into a position where I can smell her armpit. I inhale a large breath through both of my nostrils. If the aroma is how I prefer, then she passes. If I'm disgusted by her pit stink, then she'll be walking home that night. But let's just say she passes. After all, it is a perfect day. So we then go to a movie. Not 3D, because I'm not paying $16 for a movie. None of the film is watched, of course, because we're playing tonsil hockey the whole time. Ha! Yeah, boy. Dr. Love, Darwin of Love, Big Gatsby, we've all been there. The charm has been worked, she's been swept off her feet, and we return to my house for a steamy night. That's a perfect first date.
P. Tuna, wow. Just wow. I wish I was there. Oh, Mr. A Man Who Knows What He Wants. Darwin of Love, finish me off.
See, unlike P. Tuna, I like to take things a little bit slow. So, I'll start by sending mass e-card invitations. Perfect scenario, a couple stragglers have gone. I choose the best of the average. I set up a time online, uncork a good bottle of wine, and set up the surround sound from Best Buy. I get her up on Skype, and after a little bit of conversationalizing, I pop a couple of 7 p.m. so we can fall asleep talking. Wake up 13 hours later, do it all over again.
Thanks, Mandy. I hope that satisfies your question.
Oh my god, Dr. Lowe, I wish you would give me a fake phone number, and I'm definitely gonna wear a deodorant whenever I go anywhere.
Definitely a virgin. Let's end that call. Now let's cut to a quick commercial by our sponsors. Hey, Paul, you want another Jim Groom light beer?
Light beer? This is a light beer. I'll suck Luke's cup.
This is Trapped in the Closet with Dr. Love. Thank you for listening to DS106 Radio.
Welcome back to Trapped in the Closet with Dr. Love. And now on to our second caller.
Hi.
Hey, how's it going tonight?
Hi, my name is Reginald.
Do you have a question to ask us?
Yeah, guys, I've been wondering, do you really love at first sight?
Well, thanks, Reginald. It's always great to hear from a good caller, and it's a great question. Well, if you guys don't mind, Big Gats, we'd love to start.
Go ahead. Take it away, man.
Thanks, guys. I did believe in true sight. True love at first sight. I met him at the bourbon room. It was a beautiful night. No clouds in the sky. I saw him across the dance floor. He looked at me. I looked at him. I was a wreck. We talked that whole night. We talked for 17 hours straight. We were married 3 weeks later.
Whoa, whoa. You're married?
Was married. Was married.
Oh.
He left me 2 weeks later. Said me had only been dating for 3 weeks. Well, it's a sad story, so let's go on to you, Dr. Wolf.
Well, Reginald, that's a great question. I'd just like to start with that. Now, Dr. Love only believes in love for a sight if she's hot. But no, of course, Dr. Love believes in love at first sight. Every morning when Dr. Love looks in the mirror.
Thanks, Dr. Love. Classic as always. P2, now I'm up to hear what you have to say on the topic.
Dr. Love, I fall in love with you every time I see you too. Original, man. Love at first sight. It's a complicated thing, but I do believe in love at first sight. You know, why else would pretty girls get whatever they want? Guy sees girl, girl has large breasts, guy's in love. That's how it works. But love at first sight is one of the reasons I volunteer to help the blind. They can never achieve love at first sight, and that really hits home for me.
Well, thanks, P2. It was deep, it was insightful, and it really, really hit my soul. I'd love to hear from you, Darwin. Well, give me some love!
Love at first sight, huh? Now does the other person have to know about said love? You know, Socrates once said that the eyes are the window to the soul. Quite riveting. If that's true, then Darwin of Love here is the peeping Tom. Now, on most online dating sites that I'm a part of, not including JDate, of course, love at first sight is strictly prohibited. So that's a no-go on love at first sight. I strongly believe in common interests, similar tastes in movies, music, and eccentric love novels.
Darwin of Love, at no point during that speech did one smart thing come out of your mouth. That was one of the most idiotic, dumb things I have ever heard. We're going to have to cut to commercials. May God have mercy on your soul.
In a world where the strong oppress the weak, where evil reigns supreme, where only fools dream, our only hope is with one angry chicken.
Operation Cover Up! No chicken escapes from Tweety's farm!
You've got to get out of here.
This summer, the studio that brought you Hard-Boiled and Over-Easy takes you on a ride on the wild side and the only action movie guaranteed to get you laid.
These chickens are planning a little getaway.
They took his den. They took his hen. And now, all he has left is his giant cock. Foul Play. Coming soon to a theater near you.
Trapped in the Closet with Dr. Love. We're going to finish this show with some parting words like we always do. Give me some love, Dr. Love.
Parting words with Dr. Love.
This week, Dr. Love would like to start out parting words by giving all the ladies out there some advice. Now, Dr. Love gets a lot of questions about how you can strengthen your relationship with your man. Well, ladies, if you got a problem with your relationship, you might want to consider that it could be because you're just wearing too many clothes. Now hold on, hear Dr. Love out on this one. Let's say you're having trouble getting your man to commit. You're probably just wearing too many clothes. Don't you think it'd be easier to convince him if you were naked? Think about it. He doesn't want to meet your parents? The solution could be to just get naked. He never wants to go out?
Naked. Never want to stand? Naked. Want to watch sports? Naked. Only watch for your body? Naked. Trust Dr. Love on this one, ladies. And Dr. Love also gets a lot of questions from the ladies about how to tell your man you love him. Apparently, ladies just think that men will just panic whenever you drop the L-bomb on them. Well, don't worry, ladies. Men don't panic when you tell them how much you love them. They're just trying to find the right words to express how much they care about you, too. Men just aren't as good at expressing their emotions as you ladies are. We can't all have a PhD in loveology like Dr. Love here. But rest assured, men are definitely not panicking. With that said, ladies, if you could just leave the room for a minute, Dr. Love just needs to address the men mano a mano. Thanks, ladies. Men, are they gone? Okay, I just bought you a little time for when your girl drops the L-bomb on you, but you still gotta be ready. After she says it, you're definitely gonna be panicking, so just try and play it cool. Her telling you she loves you can lead to a night of steamy romance, or it can lead to certain disaster. I've seen both. It all depends on you and how prepared you are, so just calm down, identify your goals, and think the situation through. And remember, when all else fails, lie. Okay, bring the women back in. Ladies, are you back? Don't worry, Dr. Love straightened the men out for you. By the way, ladies, did Dr. Love already mention how gorgeous you're looking tonight? Dr. Love would just like to close out the show with one final piece of advice for all the men and all the ladies out there. Relationships always start out all hot and spicy and passionate, full of romance and wonder, but sometimes, after a while, they can start to fizzle. Don't worry, that's perfectly normal. Mind you, it's never happened to Dr. Love here, but Dr. Love can sympathize. So how do you keep things from fizzling? Well, you treat every day like it's the first day of the relationship. So men, never stop with pickup lines. Remember, the cheesier they are, the more effective they are. She may groan and tell you to get out of her face, but really on the inside, she's falling in love. Just, you know, slowly. And ladies, try not to keep your guard up for too long, and remember that it's never too early to feel the love. And that's going to do it for Dr. Love. Stay lovely, and see you next week.
Parting words with Dr. Love.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to Trapped in the Closet with Dr. Love. We'll be here the same time next week, and we hope all of you can come out of the closet. Thank you.
The next thing you know, she's not going real far. She's waiting for my name. I said, I can't go no further. I sit back to cover. Oh my God.
Yeah. Okay. It's very basic.
Trapped in the closet, guys. Now, let me ask you, responses. I couldn't help but think there's like two radically different audiences you've got going on. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't help that the one audience you're completely alienating, and I'd like other people to speak to it. Are you alienating your woman, your female audience
oh,
entirely?
Absolutely.
This doesn't reflect us at all. We wanted to pick a good audience that we could relate to.
Do you have any response to this?
I mean, we're going for like a, it's like a theme, you know, like the whole, like the image and everything. It's just like a sort of like a...
Lifetime is for girls, as in Trapped in the Closet with Dr.
Well, I mean, I was just saying like a 70s sort of relationship hotline where it just sort of, it's not... Like, misogynistic is the wrong word, because that, like, implies hate or whatever, but just, like, chauvinistic, maybe. You know, just, like, we're going for, like, that theme.
Over the top. I mean, it's just hard for me, and I'd be interested for other people to see where that line is drawn or not. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but we had another love show done before last semester, and that actually had two men and two women,
mm-hmm.
and so there was a balanced sense of voice, right? I didn't feel that balance, but I might be wrong. Annie.
Yeah, I was actually just going to say maybe if there had been an equally strong or present female voice that was attempting to be just as funny or whatever that was,
mm-hmm.
but I think misogynistic actually is the right word, and I say that because like there are TV commercials that still occur today that essentially echo those same thoughts, and whether it's radio or TV or the internet or whatever, I find it somewhat troubling, and I mean, maybe like I said, I think that's probably a good solution. If there had been another female voice that was saying the same thing, but for the opposite gender, it might have been a little more balanced. And I understand that you were going for a target audience. I also understand, Thomas, that we have had an interaction very similar to this before, so.
Well, I mean, did they come off, like, did any of the hosts come off as, like, people you, like, think are good people? Because I didn't think, like, none of them are supposed to come off as good people.
I don't
people,
think they
you know
come
I mean?
Off as good, and I don't know if that good and evil is that simple. I think what happens, interestingly enough, is it starts to seem far less like a critique on, like, 70s radio,
uh-huh.
and far more like a lot of stuff you already hear. So what is interesting about it, and I don't know if this is intentional or not, is just how ingrained that is.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And, you know, it's hard for me in a university setting to listen to it and not feel a little bit like, wow, I mean, that kind of can, it's a really thin line. Because
yeah.
I don't think a lot of this is so easy to kind of divorce ourselves from.
It's kind of the difference between critique and parody. Like,
yeah.
I guess we weren't really, like, doing, like, an academic, like, critique, like, to sort of say, like, this stuff in the 70s was bad. You know, we were just, like, sort of emulating the style in, like, our own sort of over-the-top parody.
Well, I also love the idea of parody. I mean, a Kentucky Fried Movie does parody very
mm-hmm.
well, where they play with that, and GrooveTube. I mean, there have been great parody radio and TV movies, but it's hard in the regards that to do that, you know, maybe it be the other voice and balance that parody so that's not, this parody seems almost unilateral.
Mm-hmm.
Like, women leave while we talk to the men.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that kind of, there's not the other side of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if that balance that Andy brought up might help but other people with their right hands up.
Or just that, I mean, it could have been done as that severe predator where they're so bad that you realize that they are losers, that they don't
uh-huh.
really get what they're talking
we
about.
We kind of try to come off as that.
Yeah.
It felt a little bit locker room.
Like one of them is like
I
sending
mean,
e-card invitations
yeah.
being sent to PM. Like, how much more over the top
But the actual have. Laughing you hear when Paul was doing that over the top arm.
Well, that's because that was just like first take and I had to leave that in. Just,
you
we
can't
know
ask Paul
to
do that again. Yeah.
Yeah, but those also, they do line up. Like,
yeah.
that does affect the way you read it.
Yeah.
James.
It's ridiculous. Like, that's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Like, I understand that's the point of it. And they are losers. They are idiots.
Yeah.
And that's the point. Like, I don't really understand the whole other, like, I understand, like, you need, like, there was a thin line, and I understand that. But if you just, I understand what you guys were going for. They were losers who were idiots who don't. I mean, you can't treat a girl like that. Like,
yeah.
It's ridiculous, you know?
Dr. Love is probably taking Excedrin PM. Yeah.
Like, Dr. Love speaks in third person most of the time, then he drops the voice, and he goes back to the first person.
I thought it was very clear that they were idiots, and that you know, nobody here supports those values, I hope so, but...
Yeah.
Light beer, you know, is okay.
But I wonder why then make it. Like, for me,
Can we not do satires today at all? I mean, why can't we still bring up that word?
I mean, no, we can, of course.
I
just...
I mean, that's what it was.
No, I mean, I see it, but I'm trying to understand how it kind of works as a... Now, maybe a satire is over the top. I mean, to me, it's kind of what's happening in Hollywood right now that's not overly convincing to me. It kind of, like, embeds itself in this idea of trying to be over the top without kind of... talking about the nuances that create these cultural, because the cultural issues we have are not nearly as over the top as maybe something like this. But what I found interesting about this is I wasn't always sure where the comfort line, you know, like where the point was and how I felt like the critique was happening, if it wasn't. You know what I mean?
Well, I guess it's like, is there like a responsibility of something like this to be over the top and also damn what it's parodying? Like, does it have to, like,
it's
say...
It's a 20-minute show. You can't do everything
yeah.
in 20 minutes. I think they picked something and just went with it.
Yeah. We would have had a disclaimer at the end if we knew that you guys were going to be like this and say, like, oh, this is...
I mean...
Like, I understand
that
it could be...
You have to understand that people are
yeah,
like,
I can understand, the, like, being offended by it, but, like, I guess it's kind of the question of, like, just because you're offended by it, does that mean it's bad? Like, I feel like in today's society, we're, like, very... like, we don't want to be offended, and if something offends us, take it down. You know, it's just like...
I think
it shows
how hard, I mean, good satire is, not to say.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You guys made a good effort. I mean, it is cheesy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's obviously cheesy, but, I mean, satire can really
yeah.
go just a little bit off, and when it's a little bit off, I think that's where you get a little comfort.
Did you think it was a little bit off?
Not really. There were just parts of it where I couldn't tell whether it was... It sounded kind of jocularity. I didn't
uh-huh.
think you guys were like this. I'm
no.
not suggesting that.
It was apparent you were being fun, trying
yeah.
to be funny, but that's...
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes with the funniness, it's like you start to run into the fact that that funniness isn't going to offend in a way that makes people kind of question what you're saying.
Yeah.
It makes them kind of question you.
Yeah, your hand.
I just, when James was talking, I have a hard time with this because I feel like there's been a conversation here, and maybe it's just the way that I feel with you and the interaction that we've had, and there are probably others in the room that know about the interaction, but it's one thing when a group of guys get together and talk about something like this, and it's another thing when it does offend someone. And as a woman, it is kind of offensive. And I'm not saying that all women will be offended or that all women should be or that all men need to take responsibility. I'm not trying to make generalized statements like that. But when James says something like, oh, it's so funny, it's supposed to be offensive, how can you even confuse it? It is slightly offensive when there are tropes in our society at large that do offend women like that on a daily basis. But apart from that, I thought that your audio was really great in the intro. I really like the way that you were mixing in splicing things. It sounded really good, and I thought the music was nice, and so I commend you for that.
Do you find any offensive jokes like this funny? Just curious.
No, I don't.
Yeah, I mean, so you're going
to
be our target.
I also don't want you to make like it seem like I don't have a sense of humor.
No, it wasn't that.
It
yeah, that's why I said this type of sentence.
No,
yeah.
I mean, and that will be the case. I mean, not everything will, and I don't disagree that. I mean, it was the audio itself and the narrative itself works, but, I mean, to reiterate what Alan says, you know, it's also you got to think about who your audience is and is it just.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it does seem like just the framing of the show, like, here's for the men, and here's the inside joke of the men. And I wonder at what point do we leave part of our audience out?
Mm-hmm.
Or I wonder at what point I even find that stuff funny. You know,
mm-hmm.
and that's always on a personal basis. But more and more, when you see what's happening, I don't always find it that funny. Not to say that more is not right. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that you can't do so.
I just think there's, more critique of satire than there needs to be. And there's,
mm-hmm.
There's a place to be politically correct, and then,
Well, here's a good question. Here's a good point, then we'll stop it at this. And satire, the idea you're bringing up is good. We had a student on UMW blogs not too long ago try and write a satire about pedophilia,
mm-hmm.
about him being a pederast. And if you miss that, if you don't do that well, we got a takedown notice from someone who read it and was like, what the hell's going on UMW blogs? People will read it and that intentionality will go well. So the idea of nailing that
mm-hmm.
is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
Because the implications of not are potentially dire
mm-hmm.
for other people who might read it and misinterpret it. That's it. So the thing is, it's important, whether it be class, gender, whatever, power dynamics, whether you're dealing with the third world, however you want to frame it, there's a lot, you have to recognize that there's a lot of different possibilities that people could be offended or you could offend someone. And that's kind of part of your responsibility as a storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
So understand that audience, that's all. I mean, I think that's really as far as it goes, because stories work in different audiences at different times,
mm-hmm.
you know? And like Michael said, you know, some people will be offended, some people won't. And
mm-hmm.
that depends upon you framing the story for who your audience is.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense? All right, awesome. Thank you, guys. All right, so next week we have, on Thursday we have three more groups. We have Counterpoint, Eagle Radio, and we have a third one. Counterpoint, Eagle Radio, and didn't we have a third group?
Study Abroad.
Oh, that's right, Study Abroad. Thank you. All right, so we'll see you then. One more thing. Week 8's assignments are up. We have some pre-production video stuff. I want you to analyze a movie. Have you guys seen the assignment? If you haven't, go to DS106. It's top, week 8. We're going to start getting into video now. One of the assignments is analyzing a movie. The second one is actually getting ready for the video assignments. The video assignments will take much more time and energy. You'll have much more stars. So I'm giving you this week as a kind of jump on both thinking about and analyzing films, but also about getting some of your scripting and kind of conceptual chops ready, because next week, week 9, we'll start talking about the technical formatting issues. Does that make sense? Of video. All right. Great. Great shows, guys. How are we stop? Awesome. DS106 Radio. Thank you for tuning in.
Be there.